Let's Get Moving with Maria. Inspiration to spend a few minutes each day to get moving on the small things that can make a big difference in your life.
Thank you for joining us today for Let's Get Moving. Today we're going to talk about happiness. What is it to be happy and how can we add happiness to our lives? And with me is Dr. Mila Titova. She's an assistant teaching professor in the psychology department at the University of Washington and director of the Happiness and Wellbeing Lab. And thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's talk about happiness. In setting up or preparing to do this interview, I started to think, am I really happy? And, you know, it's a tough question. I think I have times where I'm super happy, but I wouldn't say that I'm always happy. So maybe we need to talk about, first of all, this concept of happiness. What is happiness?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that most people would not necessarily kind of reflecting on it as you did would say like, oh, I'm always happy, right? You know, experiencing various emotions is part of the, you know, being a human. And this is something that a lot of us as humans value, actually having this diversity of emotions that we go through. So when it comes to happiness and specifically kind of how we approach it in research, because anytime you study something in research, you kind of have to come up with some kind of definition, even for something as intuitive as happiness, right? So one of the very common approaches of kind of understanding or defining happiness in research is through what we call subjective well-being. So subjective well-being is something that we use often in research as indicator of happiness. And the way that we measure it in research is through the combination of kind of two main assessments of our happiness, our well-being. One of them is what we call satisfaction with life. And that is kind of generally how satisfied with your life are you, right? When you think about your life, kind of just, you know, using, you know, kind of like your cognitive processes and thinking about it, do you think your life is good, right? So that is kind of one component of that. And when we think about happy people, we would think that they would say, yes, my life is pretty good. I'm pretty satisfied with my life. And then the other component is emotional component. And that is what kind of emotions do you usually experience kind of on a regular basis? And kind of as just as you said that, you know, you're not maybe happy like all of the time, but if you would say that you're happy most of the time, so more of the emotions that you experience, you would describe as positive emotions, and there are going to be less of those negative emotions. We would say that, yes, you know, you're kind of generally experiencing a lot of positive emotions. And in order to get that subjective well-being kind of a score or assessment for a person, we usually combine those two measures. So in other words, kind of from the research perspective, what we would consider a happy person to be is a person who thinks that their life is pretty good. They are satisfied with their life. And they also are experiencing kind of more positive emotions on a, you know, regular basis than negative emotions. And that kind of combination of two is what we consider kind of indicator of happiness.
You know, sometimes I will admit I even feel guilty. My life's pretty good. I mean, if I take a look at what I'm doing in life and my home and my children, my life is pretty good. So sometimes when I'm not happy, I feel a little guilty about the fact that it's like, why aren't I happy right now? Is that something that most people experience?
Yeah, and I think it's especially given our cultural context that we're in, because, you know, pursuit of happiness is part of Declaration of Independence, right? So in American cultural context, it's something that is so valued, and everybody wants to be happy. Everybody wants to be seen as being happy. And sometimes that can result in this kind of, you know, those moments that are, again, totally normal to experience. It's kind of impossible to be happy 100% of the time. We sometimes find ourselves and kind of catching ourselves on this, like, oh yeah, maybe like, what should I do to be more happy at the moment right now, right? But it is, you know, part of human experience to have various emotions. And if your life is overall pretty good and most of the time you're happy, it is fine to have those moments when you're not. And we just also can kind of appreciate them in a way, because that's what makes us human, right? We can cherish those various other emotions, and we're capable of experiencing those emotions too, that, you know, like maybe some other animals cannot, that are not human.
So what role does social media play in our overall happiness and sense of well-being?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think a lot of people think about it a lot of times because social media is just constantly being talked about, something that is really became this big part of our lives. Even for people who don't use it as much, there's still a lot of influence that social media brings to our life. And while oftentimes when we hear kind of people talking about social media in terms of our mental health, in terms of our well-being, we hear a lot of negatives being said. And there is a reason to that. Yes, there are some negative effects of social media, or there could be some negative effects of social media on our happiness and well-being. However, the relationship between happiness and social media are a lot more complicated. And it really depends on kind of how people use social media. So to give you one example, for instance, so I'm an immigrant, right? So I have, my family doesn't live, anywhere close to me. A lot of my friends are kind of scattered all over the world. And I am so thankful to social media because this is such an easy way for me to stay in touch with friends, family, loved ones, anyone I care about. Right? That was not necessarily an option, 20 years ago, and it would be really hard to maintain those relationships otherwise. And kind of that social part of social media is what we really should be relying on. On the other hand, I'm also guilty of going on social media and seeing all these beautiful, fantastic things that people are doing and thinking that everybody's lives is better than mine and looking at people's pictures from vacations and, all this other wonderful experiences that they're going through. So that is kind of, an example of some of the negative sides of social media that could affect our happiness and well-being as well. But it is a quite a complicated relationship. And in terms of kind of practical things of how to approach social media and how to make that relationship a little bit more positive is one thing that research shows that using social media in a more of an active way and actually relying on that social part of social media is something that connected to more positive outcomes from the use of social media. So instead of kind of, going and scrolling and not, doing any kind of interactive anything with it, we should use it in a social way, right? So yes, you have a friend who maybe lives, in a different country or across the country. Reach out to them. Use social media. Maybe they posted some update about their life. Use it as a conversation starter, right? Reach out to them, congratulate them, or ask them, more questions about it. Kind of use it as an opportunity to have a conversation, to kind of feed that social connection that you might have, maybe lost or it might have weakened because that person is no longer kind of physically close. So doing those kind of things is really what can make us kind of get positive emotions and kind of contribute to our relationship by using social media.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that's why more older people, not old people, but older people maybe use like something like Facebook just to kind of eliminate that sense of loneliness.
Yes, and research also shows that there is a correlation, which is, not necessarily a causation, that yeah, people who are tend to be more lonely, they tend to use social media more because it could be source of that social connection. But again, that is a place where we need to be a little bit more careful because if we're not using social media in those more proactive social ways, we're not going to get that fulfilled, right? So it might be what is sending us on social media. That might be why we're on Facebook or, whatever other social media platform there might be. But if we're just kind of, very silently kind of lurking, just looking at other things, and we're not necessarily interacting with people, that is not going to necessarily fulfill that need for those social connections. But we could kind of, proactively change the way we approach the use of of our social media to gain that social connection from it.
Yeah. Is there any sort of measurement or gauge? Are younger people happier than older people or middle-aged people happier? Is there any sort of measurement of who's the happiest?
There's actually no specific age group that is the happiest. However, what brings us happiness can change quite a bit depending on our age, right? So, for oftentimes, just as an example, for kind of younger people, a lot of things that are connected maybe to their career, finding, kind of like new opportunities and things like that, that might be a huge source of happiness for younger people. However, as people get older, they derive a lot more happiness from their family, from their friends, from, just watching their kids grow up, right? Things like that. So what makes us happy changes, but that doesn't necessarily affect kind of overall age differences in terms of happiness, kind of, you know, throughout our lifespan.
When we begin a new year, we always do a lot of self-reflection, things that we can improve on or things we want to change in our life. What kinds of questions should people ask themselves about happiness or really to determine if they are happy?
Yeah, that's a great question. There is one thing that I would definitely kind of recommend people to think about is to reflect on kind of their past experience of what they thought is going to make them happy and how did that actually work out for them. Because what we find in research is that people are pretty bad at predicting what's going to make them happy or like how happy that certain thing is going to make them. And the one example that I often use is like online shopping, right? We buy one thing, we think it's going to, you know, bring us so much joy and so much happiness. It doesn't necessarily. Maybe it's exciting at first. You know, it brings us like this very temporary kind of, you know, positive emotional boost. But then in the long run, it doesn't work. But yet, for some reason, and, you know, this is something that research finds over and over, we just don't learn from our mistakes. We think, well, but that next purchase, it's going to be different. This time it's going to be long-lasting happiness from buying this other thing that, you know, that is not something that we bought last time. And then we find again, oh, that, no, again, it was just a very, you know, short-lived boost of happiness, and it doesn't necessarily kind of lead to prolonged happiness. So something like that, kind of reflecting on what kind of experiences did we have with that in the past, and really trying to hold ourselves kind of accountable to like, well, if it didn't work once, twice, three times, maybe we shouldn't kind of rely on that going in the future and try something new that maybe we have not tried, or reflect on something that have actually worked for us in the past that maybe we kind of forgotten or, you know, didn't do recently or something like that. So that could be also something to consider.
Yeah, you've pointed out very well how things do not make us happy, or it's just that instant of, oh, this is great. And then a few weeks later, we've forgotten that we even purchased the item or someone gave it to us. So what should we be looking for? What does make people the most happy? You said look at some of those things where you were happier. Is it different for everyone?
There could be some individual differences depending of, you know, what are our goals, what are our values. However, there are some things that are fairly universal for everyone. And one of the biggest things that research over and over shows is so important for our happiness is our social connections. You know, people are social creatures, right? We really are kind of wired to be social and to want to connect with other people. And those social connections, they can come from so many different sources. So it could be connections that are really meaningful with our, you know, loved ones, with our family members, with our spouse, with our partner. But it could be also kind of a smaller social connections that we encounter throughout other kind of throughout our day, right? So what we can do is kind of try to increase the amount of the social connections that we experience throughout our kind of day-to-day activities. So that could be, you know, just chatting to like a barista when you're ordering your coffee. It's, you know, having like a really small conversation with a colleague on your way into work, right? And also, you know, reaching out to maybe an old friend that you haven't talked to for a long time, spending quality time with your family members. So all of those different things that we're doing, they can really contribute to our happiness and, you know, kind of help us overall, you know, feel happier and kind of also feed into those social connections that will kind of keep bringing that happiness to us. So that's one of the kind of the main things that we can do for our happiness, really.
Right. One of the things we haven't talked about is sense of purpose or fulfillment, maybe, which has to be pretty much top on the list too, right? Besides those social connections.
Yes, yes, of course. Having a sense of purpose, having kind of sense of that once life is meaningful, that we're not just here, you know, on earth doing absolutely nothing and not contributing in any way to, you know, the rest of the world around us. And what is really interesting about the connection between that sense of purpose and meaning and happiness is that, you know, there's not like one-to-one connection, but we also know that having that sense of purpose is very important to experiencing happiness. And we also know that kind of just generally having goals in life, small or big, is also something that is needed for happiness, as it is connected to that sense of purpose and meaning that we have. However, it's also interesting because a lot of the things that bring us the biggest purpose and meaning in our life also can temporarily affect our happiness in negative ways, right? So thinking about like parenting, for instance, right? For, you know, a lot of parents, if you ask them, they would say that, you know, their kids is the biggest source of meaning and purpose in their lives. However, we also know that oftentimes young parents can kind of take a hit to their overall sense of happiness and well-being, you know, sleepless nights and, you know, worrying about various other things. But it is something that, you know, most people say definitely worth it for that great sense of purpose that in the long run overall makes people very happy. And then there are other things kind of similar to that. So potentially pursuing various careers where maybe getting to that career, it could be like a very difficult way of getting there, getting training, maybe, you know, like I'm thinking of like becoming a doctor, for instance. This is something that is like one of the hardest professions to enter to. And, you know, the training is so long, but it's also one of the most meaningful professions. Like people are saving other people's lives. Like what can be more meaningful in terms of when it comes to, you know, somebody's occupation, right? But it also kind of, you know, you have to kind of pay a price towards someone's happiness kind of on the way to that goal. So that is kind of what makes this relationship really interesting and kind of tricky. But at the same time, it is very clear that it's hard to live a happy life without sense of purpose and meaning.
Right. So as the director of the Happiness and Wellbeing Lab, I need to ask you just to give us some tips in the new year of how to be happier in this year. What are some of the things that you would tell people?
You know, as I've kind of already mentioned, really try to kind of increase social connections that you have and just kind of slowly add something throughout your day that just makes you more connected with other people. Especially, I would say that if you have any listeners who work from home and then, you know, they're like just kind of really isolated, that is something that, you know, might affect somebody's happiness in the long run, especially if it's day after day after day. So, you know, get out on your lunch break, you know, go talk to a person who you bought the lunch from, right? Those small things, they do really matter and they do add up. So, you know, kind of capitalizing on the social connections, definitely something that I would recommend. Also, of course, which, you know, everybody's hearing is a new year, but I can't also not say it, is taking care of our physical health is also contributing to our emotional and mental health as well. So, you know, getting enough sleep, exercising, moving just more generally, this is something that is also going to contribute to people's happiness. And also, another one that I really like to recommend to people because it does really work so well is just practicing more gratitude in our day-to-day lives and just being more mindful of the things that are great, we can be grateful for in our lives. That could be huge things, that could be very small things, but just kind of taking time to deliberately think about things that we are grateful for. And it could be done in solitude, just, you know, thinking, reflecting, taking a moment, maybe writing things down. It could be something when we are just becoming more vocal about expressing gratitudes to other people who we are grateful for. All of those have been shown to have tremendous effects on our happiness. So I'd suggest people kind of get in touch with their gratitude a little bit more as well.
All right. Any final thoughts that you'd like to leave us with?
I would say that, you know, people often have New Year's resolutions going into the new year. And I think, you know, just thinking about very small changes that people can have that will have in the long run, pretty serious effects on their happiness. So that could be something that people can kind of consider as they're approaching new year and making their new goals for the year as well.
Thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate you. And my guest today has been Dr. Mila Titova, assistant teaching professor in the psychology department at the University of Washington and director of the Happiness and Well-Being Lab. And thank you for joining us today for Let's Get Moving. Join us on social. You can connect with us on Instagram at Moving Maria or on Facebook at Let's Get Moving with Maria for some great tips on health, fitness, and well-being. And as always, you can find us in podcast form at kslpodcast.com or wherever you like to find your podcasts. Have a great day.